drag, just a 2 o'clock cowboy, alone again tonight. Make your way across the floor, turn back around like you did each time before. Never quite know what to say, always afraid she's gonna turn, walk away. Bartender screams, last call. Suddenly it feels like you've never been there at all. You're a two-foot cowboy in a living day, just another lost shadow in the red neon light. Trying to find the words, but nothing seems right. Just a 2 o'clock cowboy, alone again tonight.
Welcome back to the Shukri Wright Show. This is Shukri Wright. You're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tusk Reform Radio here live with the special guest live in studio with the Professor Sports Allen. We're now going to be joined now with Anthony Donahue of a contributor for ESPN New York 98.7 FM. And I'm actually excited to do this because, like, I at one point, once upon a time, used to be an intern for 98.7 ESPN just 4 years ago. And certainly this is going to bring back a lot of memories for me personally in terms of my time at the station and whatnot. So without further ado, I am going to bring Anthony Donahue live on the show now. Good morning, Anthony. How are you doing today?
Good morning, my guy. I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate that. Were you interning when I was coming in, going on with Bill?
Yeah. This is fall 2015. Yeah, that's how I remember you very well, actually. I was wondering if you remember me at all.
Wow. I'm not sure. I mean, I have a great memory. I think I do. I would say I remember those days very, very clearly. Those are some really fun days in my life, no doubt about that.
Oh, absolutely. That was a time when I was there in the afternoon and evenings where I helped worked with ESPN New York Tonight with Larry Hardesty. Also, I worked alongside with, I'm sure you remember, Raymond Santiago, the producer there.
Oh, no, I've known Ray for, 15 years. You know, Larry and I go back. I've known Larry since 2006, 2007.
Nice.
Larry's been a good friend of mine since 2004, believe it or not. So I go way back with those guys.
Oh yeah, like and as I was saying before I brought you on, like, you know, this conversation that we're about to have, it brings back a lot of memories, because that fall of 2015 for me personally was actually one of the most special times in my life, in all seriousness, in terms of, you know, like interning at the station, and, you know, meeting individuals like yourself. As I was, this was like the first real world experience working in a sports station, especially in New York, like both native New Yorkers. And, you know, like, it was definitely a very fun time, you know, like working in such a great positive environment. And now I want to get your thoughts on some topics that I have in mind. One of them being, and I know that remembering the time that I had the chance to work with you, like, you're a passionate Knicks fan, and there has been a great deal of talk last NBA season that they were going to get Kyrie, they were going to get KD, and when NBA free agency started, the Knicks struck out on both primetime players, and make matters worse, they went to the Brooklyn Nets. So I want to get your thoughts on the offseason for the New York Knicks, so far up to this point, and how did you deal with the disappointing of the franchise not getting either player?
Oh, man, talk about a loaded question. So the interesting thing about the Kevin Durant situation, not as much Kyrie Irving. Like, there was some chatter that Kyrie may come to the Knicks, but nothing was set in stone.
Yeah.
Obviously, nothing in life is ever really set in stone, if you think about it.
True.
But going back to the Kevin Durant situation, like, okay, if you go back to 2010, there was a lot of talk that LeBron James may come to New York. A lot of talk.
I remember, yeah.
But nobody ever actually said LeBron James is coming to New York. As a fan, as myself, as other Knicks fans, we had hoped that LeBron James may choose the Knicks, but there was never, there were some reports that LeBron was thinking about the Knicks, but there was never a report saying that LeBron James was coming to the Knicks. That said, the Kevin Durant situation, I mean, big-time media people, current players, former players, conversations that I had was, it's a lock, he's coming to the Knicks. Not like he might come to the Knicks, not like the Knicks are on his radar, but Kevin Durant is coming to the New York Knicks, and it's a done deal. And as a Knicks fan, especially if you know me, whether you know me a year, 2 years, or, you know, since I was 8 years old, you always know that I'm a glass half full Knicks fan. I always am.
The optimism, you know, yeah.
Obviously, a lot of hell rooting for this team that I love so dearly.
Yeah.
But with the Kevin Durant thing, as it got later in the season, and the reports still were saying he was definitely going to be a Knick, I started to get skeptical. And I said to myself, and I said this on my shows, I said this to people, I said this on other shows I was on, I said, I've never seen a story where something was so set in stone but yet the person has yet to comment on it, that being Kevin Durant. Now, obviously, in the middle of a season with another team, you're not going to say you're going to the Knicks or whatever team you're going to. I just never experienced that, and I started to get worried. And then when the Kristaps Porzingis trade happened, and obviously, you know, KP wanted out, but you know, a big part of that deal was to clear cap space and get rid of Tim Hardaway's contract. And why else would you clear cap space but for
exactly
Durant?
Mm-hmm.
And then when the injury happened, just, you know, and even, again, based on even conversations I had with, you know, big people that Kevin Durant was coming, and I believed it. But, yes, I started to get skeptical. Now, when the injury happened in Game 5, when he came back to the finals and he was actually playing really well in that game, as soon as Kevin Durant tore his Achilles, I knew he wasn't going to be a Knick.
Yeah.
I knew it. Now, I didn't know. I thought he was probably going to end up staying in Golden State. I think that if the injury didn't happen, I think this, I don't know this, and if anybody says they know this, they're just probably lying and try to sound cool. I truly believe that Kevin Durant wanted the pressure. I truly believe Kevin Durant wanted the pressure of being a Knick, wanted the pressure of getting the Knicks their first championship since 1973.
Yeah.
Remember, Kevin Durant did not just, you know, sprain his ankle. He had the worst injury a professional basketball player could possibly have.
And Achilles tendon.
Achilles. So I feel there's no pressure to be a Net. In the 3-4 years he'll play with the Nets, if all he gets to is a conference final, nobody's going to crush him.
He's going to be worshipped, basically.
Right, exactly. So where the Knicks, let's just say, for example, he was rehabbing this year, and the Knicks are competing for the 8th seed. There would be questions, is he going to come back? You know, how's he going to be next year?
Mm-hmm.
With the Nets, I feel there's just not that much pressure. And coming off an injury like that, I don't think you want that much pressure.
So exactly.
I believe that if he didn't tear his Achilles, he'd be a Knick. But he's not, and it definitely stinks. But this is going to sound harsh, but I don't mean it in a bad way.
Mm-hmm.
If Kevin Durant, I think for Knick fans, if Kevin Durant never got hurt and he went to the Nets, that would be a complete nightmare. Knowing that he tore his Achilles and he went to the Nets, it eases the pain a little bit. Not that any of us want him to get hurt, but you know what I'm saying, right?
Oh, totally. And it's interesting, as for those that are just tuning in now, talking with Anthony Donahue, contributor to 98.7 ESPN New York, and also a former colleague of mine when I was an intern there as well. Interestingly enough, when going back to the spring, like when this whole thing started developing in terms of KD, I personally thought that, you know, it would be really interesting to how can he handle the pressure of playing in New York when he has developed a reputation of having such a thin skin, especially for a professional athlete. And, you know, I'm sure you've heard the stories of him creating the burner accounts on Twitter.
Of course.
And exactly. And you know, like, you understand this. Like, you also, being in New York, being from New York, like myself as well, you know that if you're going to survive in New York as a professional athlete, you better make damn sure you do not have thin skin, because you're not going to make it. Or that if it's, especially if you're playing for the Knicks, or even for the Yankees, or any New York area pro team, because of the fact that the pressure that comes with playing in New York. So the next question I want to ask you is, as we shift away from basketball towards baseball now. Now the Yankees are here in Boston. They're playing the Red Sox for four games, and a lot of the chatter here has been with the Red Sox, you know, with the season that they've had, like, and how did they, the fact that they've gotten off to such a terrible start. But I also want to touch on the Yankee side on things as well. So I want to ask you, what has been the biggest storyline in New York in terms of the Yankees? How have they been so resilient and so resourceful despite the rash of injuries that they've had to a big number of their guys who were expected to start the season?
I mean, how they've done it, I have no idea, man. It's been amazing. I mean, they've had 20-something guys on the disabled list. You know, big players going out for long times. I mean, I almost forget that Giancarlo Stanton is even a Yankee.
Oh, my God. He's been an afterthought.
I mean, I feel like I can't see him even playing in the playoffs. Didi was out for a while. Aaron Judge was out for a while. Aaron Hicks is still out. Their best pitcher, Severino, he's been out basically all year. It's been, and then when all those injuries happened, and they happened so fast back in April, you probably just thought, well, this is going to be a throwaway season.
Oh, yeah.
It's been nothing but a throwaway season. This team has a ton of personality. You almost feel like a resurgence in Brett Gardner.
Yes.
Aaron Boone has become the toast of the town.
Oh, yeah.
He's in the box thing. So it's been a spectacular year for the Yankees. A year that definitely, if the injuries didn't happen, fans expected to be where we are. But the fact that all these injuries happened, two key players, and, you could potentially have home field advantage throughout the whole playoffs, nobody saw that coming.
Exactly. Nobody.
It's been an amazing ride. Hopefully they can keep this wave going. And hopefully, but the weirdest thing is, if they do get some of those guys back, how does that affect chemistry? Obviously, baseball is not basketball. It's next guy up. It's basketball. It's a lot more important.
Yeah.
But guys could be a little rusty if you get some guys back in the playoffs. Aaron Hicks, Giancarlo Stanton, and Duhar, stuff like that. So it's definitely going to be very interesting. But Aaron Boone, hands down, is the manager of the year in baseball. Hands down.
He's got to be. And when you look across the American League in terms of legitimate candidates for the award, and you look at guys like A.J. Hinch of Houston, and heck, you can even throw in Kevin Cash at the Tampa Bay Rays for consideration as well, especially for the job that he's done with the Tampa Bay Rays, with them being in contention for the wild card as well. There is so much bias in terms of against the Yankees, but I think this year, when you talk about the American League Manager of the Year Award, you have to consider the Aaron Boone, because you hit on a point perfectly, and I'm going to add to it in terms of if everybody was healthy, it was this was expected. Okay, they are all of us thought they would be. But the fact that, and I remember distinctively, because I did a podcast with someone who was a brother of mine during spring training, talking about Major League Baseball, talking about the Yankees in particular, especially considering that we knew that Luis Severino was going to miss a ton of time, especially with the injury that he had, as well as Giancarlo Stanton, the concerns of him being healthy. We didn't think it would be getting to the level that it did, but for the way and for the organizational depth for it to been tested the way that it has, and no team in baseball has faced it, that's what makes this season truly so magical in every sense, especially now with October approaching and the Yankees have the second game of the four game series today. So the next question I want to ask you is, now looking across town, you talk about the Mets, and the Mets up until recently were, they were right there for the wild card, but things have gone awfully awry, and I know they had the walk-off win last night. So I want to ask you, what exactly has changed for the Mets over the course of the last couple of weeks, and do you think they still have a chance to contend for the National League wild card?
I mean, of course, they still have a chance. I mean, look at the numbers. But the Mets just got really hot. And you see that from teams in sports that aren't that good sometimes.
Yeah.
The Mets obviously have some talent. There's no doubt about that. Everybody knows their pitching staff has been phenomenal for a few years now. The Mets really caught lightning in a bottle in August. They won that, 15 of 16 games. And that was ridiculous. I mean, to play so bad all year,
and
out of the blue you win 15 or 16 games. Do they still have a chance? Of course. Are they going to? Probably not. Unless they just win another, 12 out of 13 or something like that. So I think, the Mets and Knicks are kind of similar. So I think if you're a Mets fan, even though you were in the World Series in 2015, so obviously over the next few years you probably had higher expectations. I know this might sound kind of tooly, but I guess you should be happy you played some important games in late August.
Yeah.
At least the Mets gave their fans something to cheer about, even though it was only for a few weeks. But when you win 15 out of 16 games, you're not the 1998 Yankees. You're not one of the great all-time teams. Going to. And you played that bad all year. You're obviously not that good. And maybe you weren't obviously that bad. But it was impossible for them to keep up the pace they were at at the end of August. So do they still have a chance? Of course they do. Are they going to make it? Most likely not.
We're talking with Anthony Donahue of 98.7 ESPN. And the next thing I want to ask you is, and this is more of a national like a sports topic in particular. When you see guys like Antonio Brown act out in the way that he's acted out with the Oakland Raiders, the thing I'm most curious in asking is, number one, if he was a New York Giant or a New York Jet and he was acting in a manner the way that he's been acting, how do you think it would have been perceived in New York by the fans? And also, do you think if he was, say, hypothetically, if he was available for trade, do you see a team like the Giants or the Jets potentially making a trade for the player?
No, I don't see the Giants or Jets bringing Antonio Brown into New York. There's just too much media, too much of a spotlight, especially with the way he's been acting. I'm not, you know, obviously Antonio Brown, he said he has his money. He doesn't need football. And listen, football is a different sport than the other three major sports.
Absolutely.
Baseball, hockey, and basketball. So as far as what happens to your body. So if a football player wants to retire after 5 years, I can't even be mad. But with the way he's been acting, I don't know if something is going on in his life. If he doesn't want to play, he should just retire.
Yeah.
If he does want to play, I'm not sure why he's been acting like such a crazy person. it's really weird. Like I said, if he doesn't want to play, if he's taking too many hits to the dome, if he's just getting his ass kicked, because that's what happens in football. You get your ass kicked. If he doesn't want to do that anymore, that's fine. Retire. Cool. Ain't nobody going to be mad at you. Maybe some Raider fans. But if you want to play, stop acting like a clown and play some football. But if you don't want to play, walk away and go live your life. That's fine, too. But just don't be in the middle and act like a clown and then want to be on the team, too. So it's very, very interesting. And one of the worst things you want to hear an athlete say is, I have my money. I don't need this anymore. That's horrible.
It really is.
One is your athletes either, you know, play their ass off because they want to win, play their ass off because they have pride in themselves, or, to be honest, play their ass off because they want that next contract. One of the worst things you can hear an athlete say is, I don't need to play anymore. I have my money. Because you know what that means? He's probably gone.
Yeah. We're talking with Anthony Donahue of 98.7 ESPN. And I have two more questions left I want to ask you. The first one is, in regards to the upcoming, I don't know how much hockey have you followed, but especially with the Rangers in particular.
I haven't followed hockey as much the last few years. I used to be a lot bigger of a hockey fan, but when my whole life became the Knicks, I kind of just almost forgot. I go to a few Ranger games a year.
Oh yeah,
I was really into the playoffs in 2014 and 2015.
Oh, same, yeah.
We lost to the Kings in the finals, and lost to Tampa Bay in 2015. I was devastated losing that Game 7. To Tampa Bay in 2015. The Rangers were built to win the Stanley Cup.
That season, yeah. So I'll ask you this. So when you look at the Giants and Jets respectively, what are your expectations of those two organizations? Because I feel like both organizations are at a very interesting crossing point with the Jets. This is now year two of Sam Darnold. The hype and the excitement in terms of now that they've added Le'Veon Bell. And in terms of the Giants, is this Eli Manning's final year as the starting quarterback of the New York Giants? And at what point do you see them making the transition over to Daniel Jones taking over as a starter of the New York Giants? So my question to you is, like, what are your expectations and or some headlines that you think the Jets and Giants will have going into their season openers tomorrow?
Well, as far as the Jets, you know, like you said, Sam Darnold's second year, you definitely want to see some important games in December. You definitely want to hope to make the playoffs. If not make the playoffs, have Sam Darnold take some important snaps in December. Maybe, you know, you're one game out of the last playoff spot. It's a big game.
Yeah.
You definitely want to see him experience those moments and come through in those moments. The Giants are very interesting because Eli Manning is probably still pretty good. The problem is the Giants' offensive line in the last few years has been absolutely abysmal.
It's been abysmal, yeah.
But then you draft Daniel Jones with a very, very high pick. kind of like, he doesn't have the hype that Eli did in 2004 when you brought in Kurt Warner. Mm-hmm. And then after a few games, Kurt Warner was benched. Eli Manning took the job. Eli Manning still wants to play, you know, all 16 games. He wants to take all the snaps, and that's fine. So it's an interesting situation. But if the Giants get off to a bad start, if they're 2-4, if they're 1-3, there's a good chance you'll see Daniel Jones the rest of the year. But if the Giants get off to a good start, you know, 4-2, something like that, you might see them cook with Eli. So it's going to be very interesting. Obviously, you know, he brought in Golden Tate. Odell Beckham Jr. is not a Giant anymore, which is still crazy to me.
Yeah.
Crazy. Odell Beckham's not a Giant anymore. Kristaps Porzingis is not a Knick anymore. Hopefully Aaron Judge is still a Yankee for a long time. But it's still, so a lot of interesting storylines for the Giants. And what's going to be really interesting is if the Giants do play well and the Giants do compete for a playoff spot, even do make the playoffs without Odell Beckham Jr., you're going to see a lot of chatter that some people say that Odell Beckham Jr. made the Giants worse with all his distractions and antics.
My man, it's been absolutely wonderful to have you on. Honestly, like I've had so much fun in this short period of time talking with you. Listen, I got your contact information on via Twitter and whatnot. We definitely got to chop it up again real soon. And thank you so much for taking the time out this morning to talk some sports. It's definitely it's been a lot of fun, man. For real.
My pleasure, man. Anytime you need me, hit me up. I got you, brother.
All right. Thank you so much, Anthony.
All right. Take care.
Take care. That was Anthony Donahue of 98.7 ESPN New York, who joined us live. Coming up next, another guest who will be joining us just shortly, who was just with us just a few weeks ago, Tom Keegan of the Boston Herald will join us. This is definitely going to be a lot of fun to talk to him coming up just shortly about Boston sports, and it's certainly going to be a very interesting weekend, especially with the Patriots season opener tomorrow night. So we're going to talk a lot of Patriots and a lot of the Boston sports teams coming up just shortly. This is Shukri Wright. You're listening to the Shukri Wright Show with sports professor Allen, live in the studio until 9 a.m. here on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tufts Freeform Radio.
91.5 WMFO Medford.
Hey, this is Scruffy Wallace, the Dropkick Murphys, and you're listening to WMFO Medford.
Vicky, how you doing? How's the knee?
It's coming along, doctor, but still some soreness.
Well, let's see. You know, this soon after surgery, some pain is pretty normal.
I was hoping to get more painkillers. The first round worked great.
We're being very careful with those now. Prescription painkillers are opioids, same as heroin. It's easy to start taking them, not so easy to stop.
Last year in America, an average of 40 people died from opioid abuse every day. Long-term addiction has become America's newest health epidemic.
So no pills?
Vicky, you're doing great. So let's try these anti-inflammatories, plus your physical therapy. If the soreness doesn't continue to get better, give me a call.
For opioids, the smaller the dose prescribed and taken, the better. Because even a few prescription painkillers can sometimes go a long, wrong way. A message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons and the Orthopedic Trauma Association. Visit orthoinfo.org/prescription safety.
At 91.5 WMFO. On the web at WMFO.org.
Leave room for your growth tomorrow.
Today, my new dad and I shot off a rocket in the park.
Today, my new son and I failed to shoot off a rocket.
He knew exactly what to do.
It's not work. I had no clue what I was doing.
We set up the rocket. Hit ignition. And then
nothing. Sometimes I laugh when I'm frustrated.
Then out of nowhere, the rocket launched into the air.
The rocket did get into the air.
I've never seen anything fly so high.
and then crashed into a kite.
Look out! Look out!
And then the pond.
I'll never forget that day.
I'll never forget that day, even if I tried.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of kids in foster care will take you just as you are. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Shukri Wright Show. This is Shukri Wright's. You're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, Touch Free Farm Radio. I mean, that was a phenomenal interview in the last segment with Anthony Donahue of ESPN New York. Had a ton of fun talking with him, you know, talking about some of the teams in the New York market, you know, like what's the vibe, what's the scene like, and so forth. You know, talk a little bit about the Knicks, you know, the Jets, Giants, you know, and so forth. So that was definitely a lot of fun. But now on the line, I have a returning guest who was on the show just a few weeks ago. Tom Keegan of the Boston Herald joins us live on the Shukri Wright Show on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford. Good morning, Tom. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Shukri, and that's an amazing coincidence you just had Anthony on, because about 15 years ago, I did a show at ESPN Radio in New York City with Wally Matthews.
I know Wally Matthews. Yeah.
Yeah, Wally and the Keegan, Anthony Donahue was our dynamite intern at the time.
Wow.
Yeah, I would have listened if I would have gotten up a little earlier and listened if I knew he was coming on.
Wow. Talk about a small... It's something else, because I interned at 98.7 ESPN in the fall of 2015, and it really was, in every sense of the word, one of the most special times for me personally, and especially in terms of my career. You know, just getting my feet wet in the sports radio industry and so forth. And he was one of the guys that I worked alongside with. He's now a contributor to the station and so forth. So, wow, talk about a small world.
Yeah, that's awesome. Glad to hear he's still doing well.
Absolutely. I'm excited to have you back on. I really am. I mean, there's a lot I want to get to with you this morning. And let's start with the Patriots, because let's face it, the season starts tomorrow night at Gillette Stadium against the Steelers. And one thing I want to touch on is there is a concern that I have for the Patriots going into this game, and the concern I have is the offensive line for the Patriots now with Andrew's going to be out. He's on IR, and you know, Ted Karras is going to be under center. He's going to be the starter now, at least moving forward, unless Bill Belichick makes a change. So my question to you is, how do you think that the offensive line will hold up against the Steelers' defense, whose pass rush is not something to be overlooked? And when you look at the defensive line, for the Steelers, you're talking about guys like Cameron Hayward and TJ Watt. How do you think the Patriots' offensive line will do in terms of making sure Brady is protected?
Well, that's definitely the one potential weakness here, and they're going to be bringing the house. They're going to be blitzing a ton, and usually you don't like to blitz Brady a ton because he's so good at getting rid of the ball, but they've got to at least test that offensive line.
Yeah.
The Steelers do, just to see if they can hold up. Obviously, it's not ideal. Dante Scarnecchia is considered the best offensive line coach in the game, but he's had to throw this together on the fly, kind of, because of that injury to David Andrews. So that's going to be the thing to watch.
And, you know, the thing about the Patriots is that year in and year out, as they have continued to find ways to be resourceful, even in the midst of different rash of injuries that they've had, especially with Andrews with the blood clot. And I'm glad that personally that he is on the mend and doing better, although he will, it looks like, in all likelihood, miss the entire season. The next thing, well, in terms of the Patriots, that I'm really intrigued by, especially for tomorrow night in particular, is this. There's been a lot been made about, especially last Saturday, when the Patriots, when they had to make the decision to cut Demaryius Thomas, and they ended up bringing him back to sign him to a 1-year deal. I want to get your take on what was the thinking of the Patriots, especially Bill Belichick, in cutting him and then bringing him back on a short term deal.
I don't know. It worked, though. I mean, they just had to do some different roster moves so they knew what they were doing the whole time.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was shocking at first because you didn't know, although Karen Garigian of the Herald was right on top of that. So it ended up being a good thing because Thomas did look good against those third and fourth string defensive backs in that final exhibition game.
Yeah.
And he's super nice guy, and he's had a really good career. So it's exciting to see that even though they don't have Gronkowski, they do have some bigger targets, including Thomas. I'm really looking forward to watching him.
We're talking with Tom Keegan of the Boston Herald live on the Shukri Wright Show here on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford. The next thing I want to touch on in terms of the Patriots is this. Is, as you mentioned, there's no more Rob Gronkowski. He's retired. Ben Watson is going to miss the first four games of the season. And the thing that concerns me is right now it looks like it's going to be Matt LaCoste who is going to get the primary snaps from the tight end position. Now, when you look at the tight end collection of guys that they have, like you know, they have Matt LaCoste, as we mentioned, Ben Watson. They also have Lance Kendrickson as well as Ryan Izzo. Do you think that the tight end position will be an area of weakness for this offense in terms of the passing game? And if so, what kind of adjustments do you think that Josh McDaniels will be able to make on the fly, considering that that there is no more Gronkowski and he doesn't have that security blanket anymore?
Well, you can just change the way you go about your business. You can maybe run a little bit more and have good blocking from your tight end position. You can throw to the running backs even more. And then, you know, as you get closer to the goal line and you need that tight end or that big target,
yeah,
instead of throwing to the tight end, maybe you throw to Josh Gordon or Thomas, who are both pretty big targets and should be able to do a pretty good job down low. So it is, obviously, you go from the greatest tight end of his era to a collection of guys that you're trying to cobble together, at least until Ben Watson is eligible for the fifth game. Obviously, you're going to have to change things. You're going to have to adjust, and who's better than the Patriots at doing that?
Exactly. And the next thing I want to touch on is I want to switch gears to the Red Sox, because here we are in September, in the month of September, and as we all know, in baseball we have seen some absolutely crazy collapses and comebacks in September as teams gear up for the playoffs and try to secure a playoff spot. So my question to you is this: with the Red Sox currently 6 games out of the second wild card, do you think that they'll have enough to overcome that deficit and still make the playoffs, or do you believe that this team needs to really focus on next season, given that they are going to have a lot of question marks that the organization is going to have to make during the offseason?
I think they're doing the right thing at trying to get the spot, because how much can you really do to prepare for next season? You know, that you have to do things differently than the way they're doing them. Not really much, especially in 21 games. Do I think they'll make it? No, because you would have to not only get super hot, but you'd have to rely on two of the three teams in front of them completely collapsing.
Yeah.
And you could see one team collapsing, but two. And Tampa Bay is the team that they're farthest behind. They're 7 games behind the Rays.
Yeah.
And I believe it's 7, and they have 4 games left with them, so they can at least damage the Rays a little bit, but they're not playing the other two. So it's really tough to see. And you know, one thing I'd like to see them take a look at is stretch out last night's opener.
Mm-hmm.
Yoliv Shashin, who, this is a guy who won a combined 28 games in the 2016 and 17 seasons, 16 with the Padres, 17 with the Brewers,
mm-hmm.
was the Brewers' opening day starter this year, and just pitched so poorly that his last appearance with them was July 24th, and they ultimately released him. But, hey, a fresh start to this guy.
Yeah.
Maybe you could see him get a couple of starts before the year is over, because last night wasn't really a start. It was a two-inning outing, and he got all six guys out, struck out four in a row, has a really nice slider.
We're talking with Tom Keegan of the Boston Herald live on the Shukri Wright Show here on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford. One thing that has stood out to me, especially late in the season, is that the Red Sox, even though they've played better overall, they still continue to miss opportunities. And even though that they won last night in the opening four-game series against the Yankees, although they won, but when I look at the previous series, like against Minnesota and against teams that have a 500 record or better, because right now they're 25 and 39 against teams that are 500 and better. Would you say that is one legitimate reason why the Red Sox may not make the playoffs altogether?
Yeah, they're not good enough. You've got to be good to beat really good teams, and they're not good enough. And sure, sometimes it's because they don't get the timely hits, or hey, your offense isn't going to be perfect all the time. They've scored a ton of runs, and you didn't expect the bullpen to be great, and the bullpen's actually been pretty good the last 7 weeks or so. The reason this team is where it's at is that starting rotation was supposed to be the best in the league, and it has not been good at all. David Price has been good when he's pitching, when he's healthy, but he's had various injuries. An elbow, a wrist cyst. Chris Sale, a rough year. He's been shut down by an elbow now.
Mm.
Very questionable contract extension they signed him to. Nathan Eovaldi, another year of elbow injuries. And since coming back, he's maybe now starting to pitch a little better, but he's still walking the park. So other than Eduardo Rodriguez, this starting rotation has been a major disappointment. And Rodriguez, very quietly, is put himself in a position to chase a 20-win season. It's all come together for him, but when you only have one starting pitcher who's exceeding expectations and none of the others meet it, that's been the problem with this team.
We're talking with Tom Keegan of the Boston Herald live on Shukri Wright Show here on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford. And, you know, shifting gears to hockey, because I'm excited for the new season starting up. So much so that I'm actually chopping at the bits. Just seeing the Bruins return to Warrior Ice Arena this past week, you know, with captain's practice the last couple of days, you know, Zdeno Chara having at least 31 players hit the practice ice, you know, for captain's practice and so forth. But there was something interesting that happened that he said that really got me thinking. One thing that he said was that there's a chance that he may not be ready for opening night when the Bruins are in Dallas to take on the Stars on October 3rd, as he's still recovering from surgery to repair the broken jaw that he suffered in Game 4 of the Stanley Cup Final. So my question to you is, if Char were to miss any time due to still recovering from that surgery, how much of an impact do you think it will have on the Bruins defensively, given that they've had a short off season and not a whole lot of time to let their bodies fully heal?
Well, I think the short off season is another reason Zdeno Char should not rush back. You know, take whatever time it needs, and maybe then a little some. They're pretty deep defensively. Saw a lot of different guys play for them last year. They had a ton of injuries from blue liners, and they kept on having incredible performances. So I don't think that that would be a death knell for the team if he's delays the start of the season. Might be a good thing for him in the long run, and maybe you get a chance to look at a young player like Beckenheim, who you otherwise might not. So I don't think that, that'll kill him. And last time I asked Aaron Boone, I said, you know, you win 100 games last year.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to maintain that, yet you guys have gotten better. What is it that you're doing better? And rather than give a tangible answer, I loved his answer. He said, the guys are hungry. Not that they weren't last year, but they're hungry this year because of unfinished business, a sense of unfinished business, that they didn't get where they wanted to go in the World Series. The Red Sox eliminated them. Well, I think the Bruins will be playing with a sense of unfinished business this year, getting that close.
Yeah.
Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final and not finishing their business. So I think they'll head into the season with a hunger and a chip, and it'll be exciting to see how they do this year.
And yesterday, as we continue to talk about the Bruins, yesterday some very interesting news broke yesterday afternoon in regards to the ownership for the Boston Bruins, in which Jeremy Jacobs had announced that he was going to transfer ownership to his 6 children. And we saw in professional sports, especially with the Los Angeles Lakers, using them for example, I know it's a different league altogether, you know, like how that worked out and so forth. So my question to you is a two-part question. Why now? Why do you think the Bruins owner decided to transfer ownership to his 6 children? And also, do you think it would have any type of impact in terms of organizational philosophy, in terms of how they go out and about and spending money to improve the roster moving forward?
My guess is there wouldn't be a change. And as far as the timing, a lot of time when a father shifts it to his children or a mother shifts an organization to their children, they want to be there to see how they're doing and be there to advise them. And, that's smart. And sometimes it works out well. I think the Hal Steinbrenner's done a fine job with the Yankees.
Yes.
He's not as interesting or as exciting as George, who I knew well and liked, warts and all.
Mm-hmm.
Other times it cannot work out, like Al Davis transferring the team to his son.
Yeah.
The Raiders, I don't know. Al was just win, baby, and I don't know if these Raiders can be winning much.
Especially, and this is the... without even realizing, you segue right into the next question I wanted to ask you, especially with the big news of the last couple of days involving Antonio Brown, in which that, one, his behavior and antics have really rubbed the Oakland Raiders the wrong way, so much so that there was talk that he was going to be suspended after he had gotten into an altercation with the general manager, Mike Mayock. And now yesterday, also, right around the same time the news broke that the Bruins were going to be having a change in ownership, that Antonio Brown was going to play. He's going to play in the Monday night game against, against the Broncos. So my question to you is, if you were the Patriots and if Antonio Brown were to be available, would you want to take a chance on a guy like Antonio Brown, knowing the issues that you have in terms of like just the lack of certainty at the wide receiver position, knowing the baggage that he comes with, would you want to bring him on board?
Well, the Patriots have been great with guys with baggage and Randy Moss and Aqib Talib, but in this case, first of all, I don't think that they would have the salary cap room to get him unless Brown, The Raiders got out from under the contract and Brown just wanted to go to the best team and would take a discount. But I don't know. I'd rather just proceed with what they've got. I know that the Patriots have a way of having people fall into line, but this just seems a little weird, this whole thing. Is he doing this whole thing to get his own helmet endorsement or something weird? Who knows? He's been noted as a great practice player. A guy really puts his heart into everything. But so far, this has not been great team behavior by him. And I wouldn't like to see him rewarded by getting to the best team. But he is a great receiver, that's for sure.
And another question I want to ask you is, and this is going back on in regards to the Patriots. Now, I've been following this team very closely, especially this entire preseason, in regards to how good this defense can potentially be, especially when it comes to like the front seven. You look at guys like Dante Hightower and Michael Bennett, who's the only newcomer, and the secondary hasn't really had a whole lot of turnover. It's essentially almost the same guys that they've had last year. So the question I want to pose to you is, do you think that this defense for the Patriots is the best defense that we've seen right now on paper, maybe since 2004? Or do you think that this defense is for the Patriots is potentially being overhyped just a little bit?
And Jamie Collins would be another newcomer, but I think the defense is terrific and has a chance to be the best one that they've had in quite a while.
Yeah,
a little surprised that they traded Keon Crossan. He played so well and was such a big part in slowing down Tyreek Hill of the Chiefs. So that one was a bit of a head scratcher. But otherwise, you look at all three units, the defensive line, the linebackers, mm-hmm. and the secondary, what's not to love about every single one of those units? You know,
yeah.
Defensive line is maybe not as deep, but Michael Bennett is terrific.
Absolutely.
He's a hungry player and seems to be fitting right in. I think it's been really exciting to watch him play.
We're talking with Tom Keegan of the Boston Herald, live on the Shukri Wright Show here on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford. Last question I want to ask you. When it's all said and done, and I want to get your official prognosis for the upcoming season since the season starts tomorrow night. When it's all said and done and you look at the schedule for the Patriots, how many games do you think that the Patriots will win based on who they're playing? Do you think they'll win? Do you think they'll win more than 10 games? And also, which teams in the AFC do you think will give them the most trouble? Do you think it's Kansas City or Pittsburgh, or do you think it's a team that I didn't mention?
If I had to guess at a record, I'd go 13-3, 14-2. I think they're that good, and I think the Chiefs shape up as the best competitor for them in the AFC again. They lost some guys on defense, but that they also have a new defensive coordinator who, I think, when you've got a great quarterback and a great high-octane offense, mm-hmm. like the Chiefs have, you want to be more aggressive and force turnovers and not worry so much about having a bend but don't break defense.
Absolutely.
I think they're going to go with a philosophy that makes more sense considering the kind of explosive offense that they have. So I think the Chiefs are going to be really, really tough, and obviously the advantage the Patriots have is they've been there, done that in big spots more often than the Chiefs have.
Tom, thank you so much for joining the show this morning. It's definitely been a lot of fun talking with you again, and I certainly cannot wait to have you back in the show again in a very near future, not too far down the line.
Sounds great, Shukri. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you so much. That was Tom Keegan of the Boston Globe here on the Shukri Wright Show on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford. We're gonna go straight to final thought, and this is when we welcome the sports professor back on, and I want to ask a question I didn't get the chance to ask earlier. We have a few minutes left in the program. What's your official prediction
for the New England Patriots for this upcoming 2019 season that starts tomorrow night? How many games do you think they'll win?
A little less than your last guess. I don't think they're going to go 14 or 13. I'm looking more at 11 or 12.
11, 12 games?
Win 11 or 12 games, yeah.
Hmm. So let me ask you this question. What? Was something you want to ask me? So, like, one last thing I want to ask you also is, do you think ultimately the Patriots do get back to the Super Bowl out of the AFC, considering that Kansas City got better defensively and Pittsburgh not necessarily a cakewalk either?
I think Kansas City is the best team in the AFC on paper today.
Interesting.
I think Mahomes is going to get better than he was last year.
Yeah.
Their defense is better. I think that's the team to beat. I think the Patriots are second. That's now, without injuries, without playing the season out,
yeah,
how it looks now.
Mm.
My opinion.
Oh, definitely. And with that being said, I definitely want to say a very heartfelt thank you very much for coming on the show this morning.
One thing I want to cover before we leave.
Absolutely. In terms of the tennis as well, yeah.
Tonight, because I've been at the Tennis Open, I've been in New York watching it live.
For sure.
And tonight Serena goes for her record-tying Grand Slam title.
Wow.
And tomorrow Rafael Nadal will go to inch one win closer to Federer's Grand Slam title.
Mm.
They're both heavily favored to win. I expect they will, but I'm hoping we have some good matches and not a blowout.
Yeah. Definitely will be a lot of fun to watch. And I want to remind everybody, for those that missed the live the announcement live this morning, I will be back on this Wednesday afternoon on 9/11 from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. for a very for a special yet important on dedication to the victims of 9/11. It's going to be a 9/11 commemorative show, you know, looking back on the events of that day, and as well as have a discussion on how it impacted sports and how sports was used to help bring a sense of normalcy back to the country in the wake of the 9/11 attacks 18 years ago, which is still even hard to even... To even say it's been that long, but again, I will be back on the air this Wednesday afternoon from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. on 91.5 FM WMFO, WMFO.org, and as well live on the TuneIn Radio app. So you're definitely not gonna want to miss it. We're gonna play some clips on Wednesday, looking back on that day and some of the things that took place and some of the things that. I mean, that frankly, we may have forgotten that would serve as a reminder of what happened and so forth. Special thanks to the sports professor, Alan, who came on today.
Thank you for having me. I've had a great time. We'll do it again.
Absolutely. Like, this was amazing. The hockey talk was just tremendous earlier this morning. And thank you to the guests, Anthony Donahue of ESPN New York, as well as Tom Keegan of the Boston Herald. Thank you guys for coming on this morning. Coming up next, Mike's on Mike will be coming on at 9 o'clock. Stay tuned. I'll be back on Wednesday afternoon, special edition. You're not going to want to miss it. 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. right here on 91.5 FM WMFO. We look forward to chatting with you guys then. Have a great weekend and enjoy the Patriots season opener tomorrow. Go Pats.
This is Steven Pinker, and you are tuned in to WMFO in Medford, 91.5 FM, pure pleasure technology, Tufts freeform and educational radio.
Leave your cares behind, come with us and find the pleasures of the journey.